There we go. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Spilling Ink, the talk show that takes you behind the book to meet the authors and professionals in the publishing industry. How are we doing, guys?
I'm good. How are you?
Everybody's just like, during the head, like staring at the camera.
How did I get here?
Like, we could be grazing.
Oh, I don't know. I've been busy binge watching Stranger Things 3. How about you guys?
Oh, not this again.
It's such a good show, man. So good.
All right, we're going to put this to the audience that's listening. We've got Isa and Anita so far chiming in. Who here has seen Stranger Things? Show of hands.
Well, what season? All of them or just some?
Any of them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm really the only person who hasn't seen it. Good God.
Yes. You have to see it,
Katie. It really is a fun little show. I mean, it's fun. I can't binge watch a whole season like JD, but... it's fun. I'm just not as committed as he is to the art.
Well, it's not as many shows as a normal, you know, network season thing. So,
wait. Isa said that it scared the bejesus out of her. See, I told you guys, horror. Isa. I can't do horror. I'm with Isa.
Bejeebus. It was bejeebus, not bejesus.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's like Goonies set in the 80s. Wait, Goonies was set in the 80s. Never
mind. Well, and Sean Astin was also in the Goonies.
That's true. That's true.
That is true. And I'm waiting until I can watch season 3 with my son. So,
Anita, you and me. I'm not the only one. Anita says she hasn't seen it.
So I've seen season 1 and 2. I liked season 1 a lot. Season 2, I didn't think it was nearly as good. So I haven't been as excited about season 3. I'm just hoping it doesn't get worse.
Well, I was wondering what they were going to do with it because I thought they wrapped it all up.
Honestly, for me, season two, I'm surprised that kid didn't win an award because I think he did a really, really good acting job as an actor. That kid was really standout, and everyone was like, you know, Hopper and 11. I'm like, yeah, that was good, but look at that kid.
I did not like him. I didn't like him, and I didn't like his best friend, the one that turns into a real jerk.
Mike was
oh man, I could not stand either one of them. I did not like I don't know, maybe I'm not liking the show for the right reasons. And you know what else I didn't like? I didn't like that she started to grow her hair out. I was like, no, she was so cool when she was bald, and now it's all ruined. It's like,
I don't have to watch it. I could just get the play-by-play from Jason.
Oh, hi, Rebecca. How are you? Everyone you stalk in the same place. I like it. Well, Joe's not here.
Oh, yeah. We should get Joe on. And that would just be everybody's favorite stalker channel.
Yes.
You have to rename your whole brand.
Spilling Stalker?
Oh.
Yeah, what would we call it?
Stalking Ink.
Stalking Ink. I don't know. Well, no introductions are needed because everybody who's following and in our audience here already knows all of us. So let's just jump right in on what's going on. What's new with you guys?
I'm enjoying the summer. I haven't done like anything. It's pretty awesome. Just hanging out with family, relaxing, a little writing here and there, but nothing like extreme, which is nice in a lot of ways. But I almost feel guilty about it.
Okay, but
summer off?
What?
Do you typically take the whole summer off, or is
no.
this new for you?
It's new, yeah.
Josh, was last year your BlitzCon or your Con Blitz?
Yeah, like 40 cons last year, and I think I published like 7 titles last year or something like that.
Wow. You can take a summer off. It's fine.
See, that's what I've been telling myself. I mean, it's like, it's okay.
That's insane. Yeah. How did you do 40 in 1 year?
Whoops.
A lot of planning. It was just planning. Like we planned by the quarter and just essentially booked cons every quarter for 3 months to go to. And I mean, we had 12 weeks off, I guess, during the year of a weekend where we didn't go to an event.
What was the biggest one? And was the smallest one the one that I saw you at?
No, the biggest one we went to was, I want to say, in Philadelphia. There was, I can't even remember. There were so many people there. It was huge. It was a 4 or 5 day con, and it was like hundreds of thousands upon hundreds of thousands of people that were there. I want to say 300,000, something like that. And then the smallest one that we went to is just a local one that we went to. And I think they had two people show up. Yeah, okay. we did not make our money back on that one.
I've been to a convention like that before. It's mm-hmm. it's kind of sad. It's like really depressing ghost town sad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's see how next week is the Atlanta Comic Con for me.
Are you excited for it?
I'm finally getting excited. It's been a rocky year so far, but I have some stuff and some surprises that weren't ready for the Puerto Rico Comic Con that I'll have ready for next week. I'm really happy about that, and happy that most of the talking that I'm going to do is probably going to be in English, and when I have Spanish, it's going to be a really nice surprise.
I think you should go on your panels and just speak Spanish the entire time.
Yeah.
and trim the beard and just leave my mustache. My name's Jorge.
don't do that shaving that you just mentioned. But yes, just speak Spanish.
Yeah. Every time they ask you a question, just be like, no, hablo inglés, and just continue to just like go off in Spanish and
but do it deadpan. That would make it better.
Top five ways to never get invited back to a con again.
Oh, that might be a good show topic, Katie. How to not get invited back to a con.
Oh, do you have some ideas there, Jason?
I don't. I haven't gone to enough cons yet, but I mean, I'm building a repertoire.
Doesn't Grand Rapids have a Comic-Con?
Yeah, Grand Rapids Comic-Con is actually pretty large, so I'll probably go again this year. Although the only notable person that's going to be there is the person who wrote Bird Box, or at least that's the only person on the schedule so far. Everybody else, I don't know. They're kind of they're more heavy into the comic side of things, and I don't read comics, so I don't recognize most of the artists. So I'm looking at mostly the media people and the authors.
That's kind of how Amazing is out here in Vegas. They cater a lot more to the comic side than the celebrity movie side, and they still draw in a pretty decent crowd. So it's worth going to.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's one thing I liked about the Ace Comic Cons, that franchise, is they really are catering more to the movie side of things, which is kind of my side of things. You know, I love all the Marvel stuff, but I like the movies. So that's cool. You know, they bring in a lot of cool movie stars and stuff like that. So that's always fun.
From a vendor perspective, if you're going as a vendor, the cons that have the big ticket celebrities, while they do draw in the crowds, those big ticket celebrities also charge a hefty amount for all of these meet and greets. And that's less money that consumers have in their pockets to spend on the vendor floor too. So it can sometimes work against you.
Yeah. Well,
apart from that, I have friends who have gone to MegaCon in Orlando, and they've told me it's not a good show to go to in terms of me being an author and having, you know, the stuff that I have to offer, because most of the people go for celebrities and the stars and the meet and greets and the pictures and stuff. And it doesn't cater so much to comics, zero. To books, very little. And everything else, if you're going to sell stuff and merch, you can actually have a great show. If you're going to sell your stuff, you might break the bank.
I've heard that a lot, but I honestly have done better at big cons where there's big celebrities than I have at other ones.
No, I've heard great things from HeroesCon. I've heard great things from DragonCon, but specifically MegaCon in Orlando, I don't know why it has that reputation, because it was like three very different people from different backgrounds that have told me that.
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with the experiences too, the people and what your marketing style is when you're behind your booth and how you approach people. Because I when I started my con thing last year, I only did like local ones, small ones. I didn't want to do any big ones because people kept saying, if there's celebrities there, you won't sell anything. You're just going to lose money. And I finally was like, screw it, I'm going to a big one. And I made more money there than I did at any small ones. And of course, the cost to get in was there, but still my profit that I brought home was larger. Yeah. But I'd also got my feet wet by practicing my marketing skills and engaging people at smaller events first. I will say at the bigger cons, you have to use more aggressive marketing tactics to get people's attention and talk to them and get them to your table than you do the smaller ones. The smaller ones are more homey and it's more chatty and everyone just kind of comes by to say hello and see what you're doing and supporting small authors. At the big ones, you have to be more like, hey, how's it going? Are you having fun? What do you like to read? Do you have anything that would interest you, type of thing? Like, you have to bring people to your table. Okay. You can't just sit there and hope that they're homie, we'll come by and talk to you.
Okay. Oh, that sounds awful.
Yeah. Well, the big ones are so bright and flashy, and there's all these colors. Like, they're not even going to see you. It's just colors when they're walking through the aisles. And so you have to grab their attention. Sensory. Honestly, my wife stands on her chair, on our chair, and like yells at people. Like, she stands on the chair. She's like, I love your shirt. What are you wearing? Come here. Let me see that. And brings them over and talks to them. And then we engage into about our books. I mean, it's bringing people over.
That's it right there. When you go to those big conventions, people are literally walking billboards for what their fandom is. It's so much easier to connect with them because of that. You're like, just like you said, your wife yells at people that they love their shirt or they love their cosplay. And that's a great way to engage with somebody, because not only are you recognizing the effort they put into their outfit or their fandom that they're that they love, but you're also sharing that too. And you can get into great conversations and actually create rapport with them that way.
You do. I take photos with them. We swap Instagrams. I post their cosplay up on my Instagram. Like, you just have to be very engaging and bubbly and extroverted, and
you have to be on
on the whole time. Because the moment you're sitting behind your desk crossing your arms, it's like exhaustion. you've ruined it, because they're gonna walk by and see Mr. Grumpy Pants behind his table and not come over there. Even if they come by on a third or fourth pass on day three, they're like, oh, that's the grumpy guy, we're not going over there.
There's always a grumpy person that you go like, how are you gonna break even?
And they're the guys that come by to you during it, and they're like, oh, I'm not selling anything. This place sucks. Like, I can't believe how terrible this is. Nobody's buying. And you're like, I sold 100 books. Like, maybe you should get out of your chair and talk to people.
There was a lady at Grand Rapids Comic Con. And you know what? It's funny. When I went to Ace Comic Con in Chicago, you know, it was a big event. However, the biggest thing was the main stage and all the celebrities they had coming through. That was the big thing. There were surprisingly few vendors. However, Grand Rapids Comic Con, which had a lower tier celebrities, I guess you would say, had just a crap load of vendors and a ton of authors and a ton of artists. And one of the guys that I talked to there, she's an author she's an indie author, and she goes up and around the country to conventions, selling books at conventions. And she's got her pitch down so freaking well. I mean, she could recite her pitch for every one of her books, and she had a ton of them. And she was like, yeah, you know, I'm going to sell out of here tomorrow. And it's fantastic. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing. But you know, the difference in the types of vendors that were at Grand Rapids, which has lesser celebrities, versus Chicago, which had the big name celebrities, it was kind of interesting, because in Chicago's it was all merch and a couple bigger comic book retailers, and in Grand Rapids it seemed like there was a lot more author and artist type that were kind of peddling their own wares.
In Rhode Island it was strange, because in the areas where they had the photo shoots and the signage, which was more like the amphitheater, on the hallways, I saw like three or four book people, but in the place where they had the, you know, lesser one signing, I saw maybe one book thing. I saw a bunch of comic books and merchandise, as you were saying. So, you know, I would not want to be stuck in the rotary around where you get pictures and things like that, because it's like a mob. Mm-hmm. You can't get, well, you probably could, because people are stuck in these crowds that are going through, like, you know, like New York City, but in November for the tree lighting.
You have a trapped audience at that point. You could really work it if you wanted to.
Well, and who was saying that? Somebody was saying that it's kind of like a sea of color, you know, how many people are there. And you know, that's how I thought it. That's how I felt at the last one, too. I felt like there was so much stimulation that I couldn't focus on any one thing. It was like, because it's just, it's like confetti, you know. It's just, it's everywhere. But I don't know. I'm super ADD too, so I don't quite trust my experience as it relates to others.
Well, and I think as a vendor, you have to know that your consumer is super overwhelmed, like in that environment, just because of all the stimulus in the environment. So, like, they say a lot. I think that they all mean well, and they say things like, oh, I'm going to follow you, I'm going to catch up with you, I'm going to buy this book online, I'm going to get the ebook, I'm going to leave a review. Like, there's a lot of things that you have in the course of conversation. It's all very honest and truthful. But if anybody's, even as a vendor, when you get back from a con after 3 days and you've talked to 100 people and you're back home, like, you don't, they all blend together. You don't remember anything. You're like, I don't even know what was said. So even instead of giving out business cards, I like having them take a picture of my business card or a picture of my book, because you know when they get back home to the hotel or back home from the convention, they're going to be sitting on their bed scrolling through pictures and go, oh, what the hell is this? Like, and so you have to do things to kind of keep it in their mind, whatever it is, because it's all going to blend together when they leave.
Yeah.
You know, I think that if I could afford it, I'd love to give everybody a little plushie of me, like a little stuffed animal Jason. Everybody gets one. That'd be fun. All right. Now, so we got a comment here from wouldn't that be great?
Would it have a vape or would it have?
It'd be like this.
With a little raven in your arms.
Yes.
I want you to have like a box of them so you just throw them at people as they walk by and just be like, take the.
Right. Oh, gosh. Language, sir. Language. All right. So we have a comment from Patricia, and I've got to read this out loud because I'm trying to read while I'm listening to you guys and I'm not getting it. So Patricia says, for authors, or hang on, Patricia. Sorry, I forgot your voice. For authors, I think events are like book yard sales. I hate signing books. I have made lots more money selling signed copies for 25 each from home. I have been to Thriller Fest, Shadow Con, Kentuckiana, and others. I am old. I'm not lugging books around. All right, thank you, Patricia. What do you guys think of that?
The thing is that when I sign a book, it's not just like signing a small message. I sometimes it gets out of hand, and my wife is like, "Speed it up, baby. Speed it up, okay?" And it's like I'm writing like a chapter here. Like, I'm so thankful. But on more than one occasion, people have resonated with that. And I actually had someone say one of the highlights was me taking the time when I had like five people in the booth to truly sign it and not just like a boilerplate. And to me, I always enjoy that because, I don't know, people enjoy it and that's who I am. So I just roll with it. I think whatever you have to, you know, whatever is your thing, your shtick, your calling card, just run with it.
And I just want to say, Patricia, that I also love JD's voice. Sexy, sexy man. He really is. No, I agree with you, JD. But guys, I have to say, I am kind of like a virgin when it comes to conventions here, because I have been to them, but only as media. I've only gone to talk to other authors or celebrities and stuff like that, to do little videos for the show. I've never actually gone to sell anything. So I am completely unaware and in awe of you guys that can actually do it, because for those of you that can do it well, I mean, it's pretty impressive, you know, because you're in there with thousands and thousands of people, and one after another, you're rattling off your pitch, but you've got to make it engaging every time. You've got to make it interesting every time. You can't just be like, yes, and then they form an agency called Asset, ASSET. I mean, every time it's like you've got to pop. So I'm really impressed with those of you who can do it well.
You've also got to know when to shut it down too, because there's people who will waste your time.
There are.
Right.
And that's hard. That's even harder, I think, than pitching people, is the just shutting it down and moving on.
Well, yeah, but for me,
that won't go away.
I just keep talking. And actually, in terms of people that won't go away, one of the hardest books I've ever sold was actually almost an hour-long conversation with someone who was really adamant about how the way that I was portraying vampires was incorrect.
They've got a sparkle, damn it.
No. They were hellbent, and I called it the Maxwell Challenge because the guy's called Maxwell. And my wife was like, just shut it down. And
yeah, I'm
like,
where was your wife in this? She's supposed to be keeping track of you.
No, she was having lunch and then she gave me the look, and I'm like, it's okay. I wasn't trying to win the argument. I was just trying to point my case. And then eventually the guy became not only a fan, but kind of, he's like, this guy's, he's a cool guy. And he brought me like three people. And I'm like, okay, that works. So it wasn't just one book I sold. It was four books that I sold, because I had a lot of patience because the guy was intense. But it was respecting his point of view and saying, man, you know, that's cool, but I needed to do something different because of this and this and that. Mm-hmm. And at no point did I.
That's great.
That's great. at no point was I belittling him or just shutting him down. And people appreciate that, at least in my case. Ah, yeah. That's my wife. She was taking care of the other sales.
and we have a comment from the great and the wise Joe Compton.
The Godfather.
You know, scrolling back here a little bit, you have to consider that not everybody is local, especially in the bigger cons, come in on a plane or travels to the event. So carrying a bunch of crap around or trying to fit one more thing in my suitcase, I would just toss it. So swag is not as effective as you think for that reason.
It's kind of Southern.
You know what? I agree. I agree with the whole swag thing. I kind of stopped this year with the excessive swag because one, it costs me money. I have to purchase it. And two, what happens to 90% of the swag you get at conventions? It goes in your convention bag and that bag gets mm-hmm. trashed at some point and you barely look at it. So mm-hmm. I tried to incentivize my swag now. So I have the metal bookmarks printed that I got from the, is a local company that does them and they're gorgeous. And I will give a bookmark to somebody if they buy a book. So they get a bookmark that matches the corresponding book. Or for my Agents of Assets series, I have agency badges. And if you buy a book, you get an actual badge. And there's four different badges. So I incentivize that swag. So that way it's actually worth something to the people. Now they could buy them if they wanted to on their own, but usually they just get it with the purchase of a book.
Yeah.
I thought of a great idea for you too, Katie. You know, instead of doing metal bookmarks with your info on it, do throwing stars with your info on them.
Yeah.
Nobody would get rid of that. We would love it.
Get somebody's attention too. Hey.
Yes.
This is kind of going back to what JD and Katie were saying on either end of the equation. But I think when you're doing conventions too, you have to be really good at reading people and understanding people and their body language and just, and there gets to be a point, and this sounds really cookie cutter, but you start recognizing like different personality types when they come to your table and if they're buyers or not. You can almost tell immediately when they're walking. You can actually spot a book reader as they're walking down your aisle and be like, oh, there's a book reader. And you can say, all right, how many books are in your TBR? Do you want one more? She's like, I got too many. It's like, come get one more. You put mine on top. I won't be, you know, ashamed of that. And it brings them over to the table. But you have to be able to read people really well. You have to be very aware of what's going on, observant of the environment, people, their body language, how they're engaging with you. When their eyes start drifting off, if you know you're just talking to a wall, like you have to know all those things in the course of being at a convention. And it really just takes practice. Like you just have to go to them, go to local ones, practice. Know that your pitch is going to sound terrible the first 100 times it comes out of your mouth, but it eventually gets really good and you get better at it with every take. And so... Yeah,
practice makes perfect. It's definitely trial and error on what works too. And what works on certain people may not work the same on another person.
Mm-hmm. And you get to a place that, you know, I use this pitch for this personality and this pitch for this personality. You can tell when they walk to your table on how it's going to go.
Well, and also for me, people judge a book by its cover, but you can't judge a book reader by their cover or what they portray. Some people are terrified of talking, and you just being open to have a conversation with them, they're so appreciative that sometimes they feel bad leaving the booth without buying something. And I always feel like the only rule here is to have a good time. If you want to buy a book, by all means, you know, I have a day job. I want to sell all the books, but you know, don't feel the obligation. And they go like, ah, shit, he's nice too. give me a book. And I'm like, you're missing the point, but okay, let me sign it.
I've had those booty sales before where it's like, oh god, they're buying it just to shut me up now.
but there's the first person, well actually the second person who ever came to my booth in the Puerto Rico Comic Con, it took 3 years to sell him a book. It's someone who doesn't verbalize much, and I just completely misread how to approach him each and every time. And then the third year I was like, hey, how you doing, nice to see you again. And he was like, oh, shit, it's 3 years. I got to buy you a book. But the first year he was like, Kindle? And I'm like, yes, it's available on Kindle and whatnot. And he shut down and just bolted from the booth. And I'm like, okay, that was awkward. I hope he's okay.
I'm starting to think that selling at conventions is really not in my future. Based on the way.
I think you need the experience. You need to at least go to one and experience it for yourself.
It's a lot of fun, and you meet a lot of really nice people. And at least in my case, since the only one I've been to is the Puerto Rico Comic Con, I've gone year after year, and I've seen kids graduate, enter high school, and graduate high school, which explains the loss of hair and gray hairs. But it's very sweet because you connect with some of them, and you know that something that you wrote was with them in a really those troublesome hormonal years. Something that you created was with them and possibly helped them. And at least for me, that's kind of comforting.
I think I can probably say that going to conventions, though, is not a sustainable thing to do. You won't be able to live on the money that you make off of conventions. And I did a lot of conventions. I did pretty well with conventions and making money. But you have to recognize that you have to buy the booth, you have to buy the travel, which can be expensive. You have to buy the product in and of itself, which is usually a third of your expenses anyway. Because if you buy a book for $5, you're selling it for $15. So you're immediately a third of your price out for whatever your profit margins are that you're getting off of the book that you're selling. And so you have to go to a convention every weekend. Ideally, you'd want to go to two different conventions every weekend to actually make enough money on it, which means that you would have to be selling books at one convention and have another person represent you at another convention and sell your books there too in order to make enough money to pay your bills. And I have another point to this. On top of that, if I can remember what it was.
Taxes.
There is the taxes. That's a pain in the butt because you have taxes for all the different states that you have to do. There's another point too that was super important. It'll come back to me in a minute. But it's just not sustainable to do it just over and over and over again long term. There's no way to maintain that constant thing of going out and selling books at conventions. You just can't do it. Oh, I know what it is. The other main thing is that there's a cap. I've been to the smallest conventions and the biggest conventions that I could find that were affordable for me. And there's only a certain number of people at every convention that fall within your niche that you can sell books to. I think the fewest books I ever sold at a convention were probably like the two. At that one, I usually average between 80 and 120, and the most books I ever sold was 170. And I don't think I could ever sell more than 170 books at a convention just because there's not enough people that can go there that fall within my niche that I can give a book to that's going to be interested in what it is that I write.
Well, that's still 170 is amazing.
Yeah. Well, and that's a really good point, though, Josh, is, you know, you've got to be aware of what the audience is going to be at your convention. For myself, I've written myself quite literally into a tough spot where I write paranormal thrillers or paranormal horror. And, this just doesn't go that well with comic conventions. So we do have a big paranormal convention here in Michigan up in the Upper Peninsula that I'm going to look into. And then there's things like Thriller Con, but that's a long ways away from me and very expensive. And so it's kind of like these conventions just, they aren't made for my kind of books. I need to have, something that's more pop culture. I think to work right at these.
And there are some pop culture cons where you could do local libraries or indie stores or things like that, just events that way. But yeah, you're right.
Or also, fantasy. You got to get into fantasy. But go ahead, Katie. Sorry.
Oh, I was just gonna say, there's also ways to cut costs down too. And like we do for Phoenix, we share booths. So it's usually three to four of us on one booth, which cuts the cost way down. It also gives you, what I always advocate for is having a wingman with you at all times. When you're selling, you need somebody for breaks. You need somebody who can catch those people who are wandering by while you're already dealing with a customer. So having that second partner there is always helpful. And if you can find conventions that are near friends or, you know, people who will allow you to couch surf, that can also cut your costs down too.
Yeah. And go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Cause I was going to read another question from the audience.
I was just going to say, just, I guess to wrap up is just knowing that the amount of money you can take it, you should look at it as being another revenue source as an author. It's got great benefits. You widen your audience, you meet new people, you make public face. It's great for marketing. But it's not a single revenue source. It's just going to carry you through life. It's a secondary or tertiary source of revenue that you can make if you're looking at it in a financial sense. It's just another way to bring in money, and it has additional benefits too. You can't solely work your life as an author going to conventions and making enough money to survive. You got to use other tactics too.
Well, I think eventually your back is going to give out.
Yeah.
It's not
you're
like
carrying all of your books. Get a cart, JD. Oh
no, no, no. But meaning those wonderful cushy chairs.
Oh.
Chairs? Who sits at these things?
Eventually.
You got to stand. You got to stand the whole time.
Yeah.
And then your knee is going like.
Oh, no.
Halfway through the convention, I'm like doing stretches because my feet are hurting so bad. My legs are hurting, but I don't sit.
No, I always get the call. It's like, take a lap, go around, stop, because you have been nonstop for 4 hours and you need a break. And you need someone to be honest. And they know your threshold, but to be honest and go like, go.
My wife over there behind our booth just pounding energy drinks down and like just keep going for 16 hours straight. We don't rest till we're dead.
Yeah, I've got like a whole case of Red Bull usually at my booth.
Well, we have another good question from Joe Compton here. Joe, I forgot your voice, so I got to give you a new one. Question for the group: do you sell to everybody who wants a book, even if it might be inappropriate for that person? Like a child? And would your opinion change if their parent joined them and said it was okay?
Only Human has a lot of violence. And I think the youngest reader I've ever sold a book to is 13. I've been reading intense stuff and listening to intense music since I was like 12 or 13. So for me, that's like the threshold. Younger than that, I would skew the conversation to other titles. I do have two titles which are middle grade and are a lot more age appropriate. But you know, tweens, for me, it's fair game because I'm looking at myself when I was that age and I was the target. So.
Yeah, and I was reading Stephen King, Stuart Woods, you know, people like that when I was in seventh or eighth grade. And I think that, you know, I mean, some of my books have sex and violence in them. And so if a kid was to come up with their parents and, you know, just looking at them, if I could see that, okay, she seems like, or he seems like he might be an appropriate age or be able to handle this, then I would just tell the parents, hey, just so you know, this has some adult content in it, you know, as long as that's all right with you, I'm fine with it. But I was at a convention where I was there with Abigail, she was 16 at the time. And I approached one of the vendors who did graphic novels, and I said, "Hey, could we look at some of your books?" And he looked at me, looked at my daughter, and he said, "No." He said, "I'll show you if your daughter's not with you," because he had erotica in them, and he was like, "You know, I don't let anyone under 18 look, no matter what." I was like, "Oh, okay, that's cool. I mean, that's your prerogative, and I respect that. You know, he had his convictions, and he wanted to stick with them, so."
But that's fine. I've seen people sell to like kids like really gory stuff that I go like, that's kind of questionable, because one thing is vampires or a decapitation. If you go back, you know, and you read like, you know, classic literature, Beowulf and whatnot, there's a lot of violence.
Yeah.
let's not sugarcoat stuff. You know, there's always been.
It was so fancy sounding. You really didn't know what was happening.
Yeah, but still, there's a lot of violence and a lot of stuff going on. But there is there's like 10 and 11 year olds, you know, trying to get stuff like, you know, with erotica and stuff. And you go like, you know what, you know, that I don't think that's such a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then Rebecca Jonesy had a comment here. I'm not sure what this means. And she says, kids are fine if you cook them properly. Thank you, Rebecca. We appreciate your input there.
How many shows ago were we debating about sex and violence and where that line is? Because we can handle as much violence as you throw at us, but if there's mention of sex, that's it. It's too. We can't have anybody read this. Think of the children. But violence, we can decapitate someone. We can eviscerate. That's fine.
Well, and there was a lady calling me a prude on that show too, and she actually sent me a message after the show. She was like, "I'm so sorry, I called you a prude. This is what prude means." I'm like, "Honey, I know what this means."
Yeah. It's all
good. We gave each other all sorts of shit on this show.
I ran into that when I was editing movies for the television station. I edited, you know, most of the stuff out of Friday the 13th as far as sexual content, but I left the skinny dipping scene in because there you couldn't see anything.
Oh, that's a bummer.
We had a parent call that was livid about that. And I'm like,
that you couldn't see anything?
No, that the scene was in it. And I'm like, okay, you're mad about that, but you're not mad about the axe in the face? Because we showed that full. It was like, something is wrong with this picture.
Yeah. And in terms of
warning, and then let the parents decide if they're with them. Because honestly, you know, like almost every one of you said, we were reading and or listening and or watching things that were not appropriate for our age when we were that young. So
yeah.
Oh yeah, I was reading dark, gruesome stuff in seventh and eighth grade.
I think more than age, you can see when a kid is not that they're ready or not, but that they could, you know, handle that. And there's 13-year-olds that you go like, wow, man, their first kiss is going to be like in their 20s, maybe. And you go like, you know, I don't want to be the parent that tells the kid that Santa Claus doesn't exist.
Yeah.
In that sense.
Wait, is this like sex Santa Claus? Is this what are we talking about here, man?
No, but hit a whole new erotic area now.
Bring me milk and cookies. No. And Elle can get in on it too. And Mrs.
Muy caliente.
Muy caliente.
Oh my God.
No, but you know, there's violence, and there's it's the difference between Die Hard and the latest Rambo in terms of graphic violence. One of the most graphic violent movies I've ever seen is that latest Rambo, and yeah, it's just it's raw.
Gory. Yeah.
And I wouldn't want a kid to see that, because that I think it's too much. And when I say a kid, I mean really way kid. I saw Full Metal Jacket when I was 8, and it did its damage.
Yeah.
So I'm also speaking from experience. If I could have undone that experience, I would have, because I saw the suicide scene and it just messed me up. I was like 8 or 9.
Yeah. Do you know what messed me up when I was in I went to a Catholic school, so it was like K through 8. I'm going to say middle school. That's like 7th and 8th grade, something like that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I think I was in 7th grade. And went over to, you know, some kid I went to school with's house, and he had one of the Faces of Death tapes. Yeah. I had no idea what I was getting into. It was just like, it was a boy's birthday party hangout kind of thing. And I was not okay for a very long time after that. I mean, those are messed up, man. I mean, some of the stuff that's available is... it's pretty nasty. I mean, I would much rather one of my kids see a sex scene than see what I've seen as far as violence goes, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of truth to that, though, too. I mean, I can't tell you how many books I've sold, and I've sold books to kids that are 13 as well of mine. And it's the same thing. It's like, you know, there's a lot of graphic violence in here. There's torture. There's cannibalism, you know, et cetera. Is there any sex in it? Well, no, I don't even write about romance. There's nothing like that. And then they're like, oh, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, that's fine. It's like, how's that fine? It doesn't seem like that should be fine.
Well, but they're comfortable with violence and blood, not the opposite sex, Jace.
I want to say it has something to do with just American culture in general.
That's, that's what I was going to say.
That's just America. That's just, and it blows my mind. Yeah,
that's America. You know, it's funny. My youngest, who's 10, and don't call me a bad parent because I might be. But she absolutely loves horror movies, and she will watch the scariest shit. Yes, we'll address that in a moment, Joe. but she watches the scariest stuff. You can think of anything on Netflix or Hulu that's scary, she'll watch. But if something comes on and there's a woman topless in a scene, she is absolutely mortified. And it cracks me up, because despite what our caller several weeks ago thought, we are very, very sex positive in our house, and we would just kind of watch whatever, whenever. And so it cracks me up that it's in her head that way, and we didn't put it there. So it's like, wonder where she gets that. Is that something at school or talking to your friends where it just becomes a taboo thing? But anyhow, we're getting lots of great comments here, Katie. I feel like we should address some of them, you know, in particular. First off, this one right here from Joe Compton. Joe, Santa does exist, buddy. don't listen to JD. All right. And it's not erotica Santa Claus. Real Santa does exist. There we go. That was the most important comment.
It's second most important is witch tits.
Yes. Yes. All right. So witch tits. Joe, what are we talking about here? Which tits are the witch tits?
He's referencing my book, Blood and Bile, where it's the very first line is it was colder than a witch tit. He's very fond of that line.
That's awesome.
And Rebecca wants us to know that erotica Santa does exist.
Erotica Santa.
So she wrote clause with an E, so it's a clause. There's a Santa Claus.
Well, there's actually dinosaur erotica, so Santa Claus erotica does not surprise me at all.
Oh, you know, JD, we're going down a dark hole now.
JD, so let me tell you something about dinosaur erotica.
Oh boy, the expert. He just rolled up his sleeves.
And then I was done.
That was a sex scene in Morse code.
You know, I didn't know that it existed until a few years ago because, all right, I guess I'm a little naive because I always thought that sex with animals was like an illegal thing because I'm pretty sure it is. So I didn't know that you could write about that. So when somebody told me, yeah, you got to look at this review for this, it was a funny review on a dinosaur erotica and it was hilarious. And I was like, oh my God, this actually exists. So I bought a copy for each one of my guy friends and sent it to them for Christmas. And I got to tell you, it was very well written.
Was it well received?
Taken by the pterodactyl. I don't know. I never heard back from those friends again.
I wonder if it's considered a bestiality if you use animals that are no longer living or were never living. Like you probably write like unicorn erotica.
Too close to a horse.
Is it too close?
Well, if they're alive in your book, then they're not extinct anymore, right?
That's true. Yeah. Manifest them into existence.
And wolf shifter and all of that. So it's.
Oh yeah, that was another thing that I had questions about for a while. I wanted to know if all of you ladies who write, I'm saying all of you ladies, if you ladies who write animal shifter romances, if the romance is happening while they're in human form or in animal form.
I heard so, there was one book where it is written that way. Yeah.
For me, it's human.
Same.
But there are authors in the paranormal fantasy who write it the other way, or the paranormal romance that write it the other way.
Fans of furries.
Yeah. And see, I need you guys' help. I need to find something else to call my books besides paranormal thrillers, because as soon as I say the word paranormal, they don't think of ghosts or the occult or demons and shit like that I actually write about. They think of paranormal romances. That's what goes off in everybody's head. And that's not what I write. And I don't want them to think that. So I need something new. What's that?
I like how you.
Supernatural suspense.
Supernatural suspense. Okay. All right.
I like demons. I like demons, the occult and shit.
Yeah.
That kind of works. That's what it is. I like me too. But I do have romance in some of my
Well, Rebecca's out there, and so is Julia, our publisher friends. What do you guys think? What can I call my books, guys?
Oh, here we go. Look. Either is accepted. Shifter erotica is how people get around the bestiality ban. Interesting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I have mixed feelings on that.
Yeah.
So instead of gender fluid, it's monster fluid, which also sounds horrendous.
Oh, that's even worse.
All right. Now, JD, you want to know something?
About monster fluid? No, I don't want to know anything about monster fluid.
No, this is nothing to do with monsters. Well, we are monsters. One thing that, Rebecca, we're going to get back to you. This is something that bugs me. Okay. As humans, we are all about consent, and we should be. We're about consent for sex and consent for everything. However, in the veterinary field, it's not that way at all. Like if you ever get into veterinary reproductive medicine, it's really kind of disturbing. I mean, because they take these stud dogs that didn't consent to anything, and these female dogs that didn't consent to anything, and they literally manually stimulate the studs until they have the juice to impregnate the females. And there's something that really, really bothers me about this. And it's an everyday practice, but I can't get my head around that. It doesn't seem right to me. I don't know.
Yes.
Anyhow, you're right, Joe. Katie has taken us off the rails at a record pace. At record pace.
Record
plague? He can't even read it because it's a lie. It's all you, Jason. It's all you.
Oh, you know what? Darn it, Rebecca. Is there time for me? You know, Rebecca, I need to revise The Life of Pets because I forgot that I needed to include a repro scene in there too. Sorry. Wow. Just so you know. Sorry, guys. This was a private conversation.
Very.
Yes. Yes, Rebecca, that's exactly right. I cannot get my head around doing that. Especially when I didn't ask for it. So anyhow, Josh, how you been, buddy?
You know, I've been doing well.
Catching up after just reading the word handjob.
We have some pretty sick listeners, all right, guys? Oh, goodness. So, J.E. Taylor and Katie Salitis, tell us a little bit about this project you're working on together.
It's fine. Am I allowed to? I don't know. She's the boss. Hang on.
Rebecca yes, says, try stretching your jaw muscles first. There's something.
It's really after my birthday. Oh, yes. No, we're having fun writing it. Katie's just, you know, a monster at getting words down, which normally I am, but lately I've just been like, you know, sick with the cold and cough and then up here on vacation, and I just, you know.
What's it about? We want to know the goods.
Not only we have to know.
I'm under contract, so she's the boss. I can't
say. Oh, my God. It's bestiality, isn't it?
No, an escape demon going after the seven deadly sins.
Ah. Yes. Sweet. Mm-hmm. That sounds awesome.
Ages 10 to 12, right?
Yeah, there you go.
It's a middle grade.
What's in the box, man? What's in the box?
Lunchables. Lunchables are in the box. Lunchables and Satan.
Well, we've identified gluttony. What are the other ones?
I watched that movie the other day with Abby, and thinking that she would think it was amazing. And at the end of the movie, as they're hauling Kevin Spacey away, and I'm like, oh God, I love this. Abby's like, there's some really shitty acting in this movie. I'm like, what is wrong with you? You are out of this house. You're done.
Oh, damn.
What movie is this?
Seven.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman, Kevin Spacey.
I forgot Pitt. Kevin Spacey was in that movie. Yeah. I'm like, where was he? Was he the bad guy?
Yeah.
Bad guy.
Oh. Well, it's been a long time since I've seen it. I know Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman were in it. I did not. I forgot that Kevin Spacey was the bad guy.
Well, then we had American Beauty on today, where he's super creepy and lecherous.
I love that movie.
Oh, my gosh.
Are you guys just on a Kevin Spacey binge now? Is that what's going on?
I've never looked at a plastic bag the same way since I've seen that movie.
It's so beautiful.
there's always people like that you go like, okay, there's artsy stuff. And then, seriously?
I watched American Beauty so many times, like in my early 20s, just binge watched it over and over and over again.
Oh, shoot. Sorry, guys. I was totally off. Yeah, they hauled Brad Pitt away. Yeah, Kevin Spacey does die. Yes. In my head, it was actually a happy ending, which it was.
That's the secret to watching movies. Just imagine your own endings.
The Disney version is going to have a happy ending. No worries.
Yes.
Oh, Disney's just taken over everything.
And then there's going to be an extra scene with Ant-Man.
okay. Why not?
All right, I'm good with it. So what do you guys think of the new Little Mermaid being Halle Bailey?
I have a lot of words to say about this, but I
don't really have an opinion.
Say your words, Josh.
I am totally fine with it. I think I had this conversation the other day with a group of friends, and I was telling them, because one of them was upset that they keep remaking old stuff and they keep changing the base storyline of things and incorporating new ideas. But in my mind, as a writer and a creator, all stories have been told over and over and over again, and their own twist has been put on them. So let them make their new version for new generations, and let the old versions, you know, either be remembered and be vintage, or let them die away with the people who enjoyed them. Like, it's not that big of a deal. Let them write their story and tell their story.
As long as no one ever remakes Princess Bride.
No, that
right. That's a lot. That needs to be our next amendment. But beyond that,
that'll be in 20 years.
But no. I don't. I mean, I get tired that they remake stuff over and over again, and that it's all the stuff we grew up with, and they don't really bring in any new things very often. It's a lot of old remakes, but I don't really care that they are, like, in the sense that they're remaking it and putting their own twist on it. Let them do it.
Yeah. I'm tired of all the remakes. They have done so many remakes lately of everything outside of Marvel and DC. You know, all the other movies seem like they're just regurgitated from the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
But I will say that I didn't even like the original Little Mermaid.
Out there. We all have new stuff that's great.
And I actually really did. I loved the original Little Mermaid because I was super into Disney movies when I was young. I still love Disney movies. One of my favorite posts about it, because everyone seems to have an opinion, is, you know, just a little Twitter meme kind of thing from a girl that says, you know, she was a pale-skinned redhead growing up, and she idolized the Little Mermaid, and she really felt connected, and she loved that she was represented. And then the next line was that, you know, she really hopes that young African-American girls can feel that same way about this new mm-hmm. Little Mermaid. And I was like, fuck yeah, man.
Yeah, that's absolutely beautiful.
My only issue, and I've talked about this a lot with my wife,
we know.
No. My only issue with the whole decision is, why did Disney do it? Was it just to? I don't mind the casting. I don't care about the casting. My issue would be the Machiavellic reason for the casting. Did they really do it because, oh, she's the best, she's the one, we really think it's going to be the Vision? Or were they like, this is going to create a media frenzy, people are going to go batshit, and we're going to get a lot of free press out of it?
Here's my question, and this is being honest, not argumentative. Does it matter? You know, does it matter if they're doing it to give young African American girls representation, or because they want to make shitloads of money, or because they think she's an amazing actress and they've got a great story? I mean, does it matter?
It shouldn't matter, but what leaves a weird taste is the why.
Sorry, JD.
No, sorry.
No, I said they want to make shitloads of money anyway, because that's the whole purpose of entertainment. So
I want to make shitloads of money.
We all do.
Help me out here.
I got to say, I never really liked Little Mermaid as a kid. I thought that it was...
Can we mute, Jeff?
I feel like the guys were chauvinistic. Like, the ideology behind it was messed up. And I didn't like that the mermaids didn't eat people like they were supposed to.
Well, I've never heard that mermaid eating people thing, but I'm really, really interested to see this. And
that's the actual mythology behind mermaids. They got on the boats and ate sailors.
Are there tentacles also?
No. Yeah, my siren when she sang that people would go crazy and kill each other. So, yeah.
Nice.
The original Little Mermaid was quite interesting. Like the original Little Mermaid. Yeah, Rebecca's talking about it, where she was walking on her legs and it felt like broken glass. She traded her tongue in to make the deal. And because she didn't earn the prince's heart, she was supposed to kill him in order to regain her tail, and she couldn't do it. So she ends up evaporating into sea foam. I mean, it's a great story.
Yeah, I'd watch the shit out of that.
is this a movie too, or just a book?
There's an old cartoon that was made a long, long time ago before Disney did theirs that follows that storyline. But that's the original, like, Hans Christian Andersen version.
It's like Frozen. They were supposed to, the sisters are supposed to, one of them was supposed to kill the other one. That's the actual story behind Frozen. And then they made it all lovey-dovey and made up a bad guy in it and all sorts of stuff. Like, it made me mad.
Snow Queen, wasn't it? Where she was supposed to save her friend whose heart was frozen by the queen.
I think they were sisters, though, and then one of them kills the other one, though. It is a Snow Queen, yeah.
I really want to see these murders.
There's a lot of remakes of the fairy tales, depending on who did them. And so there are different versions out there. But yeah, the original fairy tales are hella dark.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, mine are a little bit dark.
Who do we know that's in film that could help us adapt these? Huh? Who do we know that's in film that could help us adapt these? We need somebody that knows something about the film industry. If any of our listeners do, get in touch with us, because I need to see some of these murderous fairy tales come to life.
And somebody go rewrite the song Just Kiss a Girl, because that is just, that whole song is so messed up. Well, you need to ask permission first, and I don't like that they just insinuate that he can do whatever he wants. So
it was like the Michael Jackson song, The Way You Make Me Feel, the video, which I think out of all his videos has all the pelvic thrusting plus extra. It's like, it's, and I love the song, but the video is a bit uncomfortable.
Can you stand up and show us a little bit of the dancing?
No.
The way you're making me feel. No? Nothing?
No.
That's all for you. That's all for you, Jason. Speaking of Jason, you got something happening this week. You want to talk about it?
What do I have happening?
Don't you have that library thing going on?
Oh, yeah. Live show coming up on Monday with Stacey Filick, who wrote The Queen Underneath. And it is such a cool freaking book. Oh, man. I'm really, really geeked. So, and she lives in, I think she lives in Kalamazoo, which is only about an hour away from here. So she's driving up to the library. We're going to do a live show on stage, hopefully go out and drink some margaritas afterwards, eat some burritos. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be a good time. And then we have the lovely Katie Salitis also coming into town next week. What day are you coming in?
Wednesday.
Okay, that's going to be cool. And then your show's the next Monday after that.
Yeah, and then Tuesday I'm teaching the class.
That's going to be so cool. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm already working on a witty intro for you.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I'm just out with... to hang out with my friends. This is going to be awesome.
No, it's going to be so cool. And then Julia's coming in from the other side of the state to hang out. We're going to go to Saugatuck and go shopping at some of the really cool artsy shops. There's an amazing tattoo parlor right there in Saugatuck.
Are we all getting matching tattoos?
I would be down. Julia, are you still there? Julia, matching tattoos. Yes, three fewer tattoos.
Oh. It's going to be fun, but I'm excited about the whole library thing. Can you tell, we haven't talked to you about the library thing on Spilling Ink. Can you tell everybody what's been going on, how it's been? You know, what's the reception been like?
Yeah, it's been really good. The first show that we did with Miranda Oh, we didn't have a huge attendance, and we kind of chalked it up to it being the very first show, and some of the schools hadn't let out, so there weren't a lot of people that were doing the summer reading program. But then the next show was Tosca Lee, and I believe that some of us here have spoken to Tosca. I know that she's been on your show, Joshua, and she's a really fun lady to talk to, and had a great turnout. And basically what we do is a lot like what I do on the podcast, The Raven, is I have the author read a portion of their book, and then we just do a really deep dive into it. But it's not the typical questions you're going to get at an author signing or at an author talk. I'm actually there to ask them the questions so that I'm getting those answers that readers want to hear, and so that we get a little bit more into the story than what an author might just come up with off the top of their head. And so that's what I wanted, is to give people a really, like we say on this show, a behind the book look at everything. But it is super fun. You know, we have a signing afterwards, sell some books, meet some people, shake hands, then go drinking and eating. And it's just an overall good experience. So I'm really digging it. And of course, I record the whole thing, and then it goes up on the podcast and lives on the internet with all the rest of us.
Those are both two home run guests. Miranda Oh and Tosca Lee are both amazing women.
Yeah. There's so much fun. And Miranda is so charismatic on stage. She's amazing. She was like born for that.
Yeah, I met her last year. I need to get her over on Writer Imperfect. She is an amazing woman.
Yeah, she's pretty awesome. She's in. Have you read her books yet?
Mm-mm.
So Miranda pitches these books as kind of fun, campy, inspirational stories. So I'm thinking inspirational books, right? Well, they are inspirational. They're also a little naughty. They're a little dirty too. So maybe I'm like, holy shit, girl.
But the title is perfect. And if you want, it's a great mantra for anyone. Yeah. Exactly.
Hell yeah, it is. Hell yeah. She is amazing. I love that lady. But yeah, when I got to her chapter titled Panty Soup, I was like, it's going to take a left turn here. Miranda, I love you. And I did really, really enjoy your books.
It sounds exciting. I can't wait to hear how this week's one goes. And then I can't wait to jump out there too.
Yeah, it's going to be good. And I would say that as someone who likes fantasy, Katie, I recommend picking up Stacy's book. I think that you will really like it. It's a really freaking cool fantasy novel. So, yeah. All right. Well, that's all I got. Wait. We got all sorts of comments. Any last minute stuff that we need to?
I don't know. Anybody else have any news they want to announce or, you know, anything they want to bring up before we go?
Oh yeah. Do you guys write as well? Joshua and JD?
A little.
I had the Blood of Dragons audiobooks come out on audio the past couple of months. So Annerfell's now out and Hey Sheol are both on audio, and the compilation of both of them are going to be out, and then Death at Dusk will be out on audio this fall.
Ooh, who's doing the audio for that?
Todd Meneses, who's the one who did the Blood of Dragons as well. Oh. Yeah, and he also did Highborn Longwalker, so he's done a fascinating job with it. An awesome job.
Is he a really deep voice like yours?
He does. He does a lot of different voices, but yeah, he does a deep voice too. And he speaks in a Slavic accent, which makes it a lot of fun.
Lovely.
Perfect.
The accents do it every time.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Although I did love your reading when you did the first chapter of Death at Dusk. I didn't know how you pulled that off. I was like, holy crap, man. That's commitment right there. All right.
It was one kid, one swamp.
Yes. Well, JD, what about you? What are you working on, man?
I finally have the physical book versions of a project that I call Blank Comics. It's a tribute to my grandmother. My grandmother actually had advanced glaucoma and was blind. And rather than do a character as a tribute, I wanted to do a whole project. So basically, I give you the panels, I do all the dialogue and speech bubbles, and I give you and I design the panels, but I tell you what goes in the panels, and there's no drawings because as a storyteller, I'm blind and I need people to help me see the story. There's a dual thing for that project. First off, I think we live in a time where the tolerance of different points of views is non-existent, and anything that can, because I tell you, draw a car, and basically we have five people on the panel. We can drive five cars, and who's right? All five people, because it's five different perspectives of the same thing.
I can't draw anything, so I would be wrong.
Even a stick figure is valid. That was one. And the other thing is that in 2015 or 2016, I think it was 2015, they actually did talent scouting for DC, if I'm not mistaken, at the Puerto Rico Comic-Con. About 200 people, a lot of them kids, went and tried out. Two got selected, and there was like hundreds of kids like depressed and moping. And I was like, I wanted to help. So basically this is also a tool for someone to have something in their portfolio. So, you know, draw the comic, take it, do your thing, because there's a lot of people who draw and are great drawing, but they're not great storytellers, or they're not into storytelling. They just want to capture that image. And they want to express it artistically. And I anything that can help, you know, people, and also to try to have an interesting narrative, because I've never bumped into anyone that I would say, oh, let's do a comic together. And who knows, maybe that happens or that spills over.
I think that's really, really cool, man. And you actually said something that I wanted to touch on, and we don't have time to really dig into it, but I'll just kind of leave it with you guys to think about. You said that, you know, there's not necessarily a lot of tolerance for different things. And, you know, I was speaking with a man not long ago who really stuck with me. I'm still trying to get my brain around it, that, he doesn't think that tolerance is necessarily the answer. He thinks that understanding is more important than tolerance. And I'm still trying to digest that and see what I think of it. But I thought that was a really interesting thing to say or to hear.
It's an interesting thought. And I don't think, at least for me, I'll give a quick answer. I don't think it's A, B. I think it's a little bit of both to make a C.
Okay.
And you need a little bit of both. To have like a proper conversation, because tolerance can just be staying quiet.
Yeah.
Understanding takes some thought.
Yeah. Well, and I know that, you know, Katie and JE, we typically don't talk too much about our own books at the end of the show. We typically talk about our guests, but I do want to say that I've signed on with Three Theories Press, our wonderful friends, and they are producing a collection of short stories of mine. They're all going to be dark, creepy fiction. It's all really, really good stuff. All not appropriate for under the age of 13. We'll say that. But so that's going to be really good stuff. And I think our release date is penciled in for January 16th. So I'm really excited to finally be able to bring you guys something new to read. So
it's cool. And Jason, you and I are now publishing buddies, because I signed on Three Furies as well for my Rosalind Sparks books, which are all of my pen name erotica romance.
Oh, wait, I did that wrong. I got to go back to Stranger Things.
All right, we won't keep you guys too much longer. JD, Joshua, thank you as well for hanging out with us tonight. We got to bring you back on again, touch base. Josh, when is Writer Imperfect coming back?
We will be back the first Friday of August. So we'll be back August 2nd. August 2nd is our first show back for season 2.
Awesome.
I have no idea who's on. I haven't even looked at the calendar.
Are you going to do that the 3 days a week again, or are you going down to one day? Or
2 days. It'll be Monday and Friday now.
Okay.
That's
okay.
A good schedule.
3 days burnt me out. It was hard.
Yeah, I can understand that. It's hard enough for us to keep up with one once a week.
Yeah.
And there are three of us.
Yeah.
But we did it. I mean, we got 60 episodes done in 5 months. So I'm proud of that accomplishment. I'm not going to do it again.
All right. And JD, good luck at the convention. You said next weekend?
Next weekend.
All right. Yeah.
Over at the World Congress Center downtown.
Have fun.
that's the main thing. I will take bananas, I promise.
I expect a full report. I want to know how it goes.
Yes, you will get it.
Before we sign off, Larry Dean, is it Toller or Toller? Toller. Larry Dean Toller II. Ah, what a cool name. Will this be able to be viewed again? Definitely. Katie's going to have it up on YouTube later on, and she'll share a link right on Spilling Ink's Facebook page. That way you can just watch it over and over and over if you want to, man. I don't know why you wouldn't. So.
And then, Jason, you'll be posting that up to our podcast as well, so you can have some easy listening on the car ride to work or wherever you may be going.
Yes.
Easy listening, dinosaur erotica, and the existence of Santa Claus.
Yep.
Well, guys, it's been another good show, guys, with some of our favorite people, JD and Joshua. You guys are fantastic. We always love having you on. And I thank you to everyone who chimed in tonight with all of your comments. Yeah, I keep seeing new comments from Rebecca Jonesy. Rebecca, you crack me up, girl. All right, everybody. If you enjoyed the show, click like, share it around, tell your friends to come watch us, and look for it to pop up on YouTube. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Katie, you got to hit